Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
This is Jeremy McFarland for the Football is Family podcast. You ever wonder why the NFL has dominated television ratings for over 20 years? Ever wonder why so many fans follow their home team with almost religious zeal? Ever wonder why we love the NFL and even college football so much? Questions like these are brought up on today's episode of the Football is Family podcast with special guest Darren Hayes from the Football Pigskin Dispatch. We delve into what makes the NFL so special and why fans follow the sport so fervently. If you'd like to be part of the Football is Family podcast, new episodes drop each and every Thursday. You can follow us on Twitter at Jeremy_McFarland and on the Football is Family Facebook page. Also, hop over to the Sports History Network website and check out some of the great other podcasts that our family has to offer. We're back to Football is Family podcast, and I have a friend of the show on. And if you like good podcasts, you would know his podcast. You want to introduce yourself again, my friend?
Well, my name is Darren Hayes of Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and it's a pleasure to be here once again with you, Jeremy. I appreciate it.
Well, last time I think we talked about the Steelers, but this time we're going to kind of go a little bit deeper into your fandom.
Okay.
Because there's just not just one team. You and I both know that there are multiple teams, even though it should have been the Titans in the Super Bowl. I'm just saying. What did you think about last night? And by the way, this show was recorded on the 8th, so yesterday would have been Super Bowl.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly, I don't think, what anybody expected, except maybe some Tampa Bay fans. I thought it would be a much better game. But, boy, you got to hand it to Tampa Bay. They just picked out the weaknesses of the Kansas City and played right to them. They played their game.
They did. I picked Tampa by 3. I was wrong. I was so wrong. My youngest kept saying, "Daddy, your team's going to lose. Your team's going to lose." I'm like, "I don't. My team has already lost. I'm just enjoying the game, you know." So did you get to watch the whole thing?
Yeah, I did. I watched, maybe not like the last 30 seconds. It's out of question by then, but it was interesting. I mean, if you really watch what Tampa Bay did to attack, especially defensively, I mean, they smelled blood in the water with those two starting tackles out for KC, and I think they just went after them. Barrett and JPP, and they just manhandled those poor guys that came in to substitute tackle, and it was evident. I think I read today they had the one tackle gave up 13 pressures on the quarterback. The other one gave out a dozen. So, yeah, 25 pressures with just Barrett and Pierre Paul, you know, coming in.
Now, I remember, and you probably – I cannot remember the year, but I remember when Eric Fisher was taken, I believe, first overall or second overall in the draft. And people were like, well, that's a horrible choice. Well, was it?
Oh, yeah. It showed up with him not there yesterday, that's for sure.
Well, he definitely is a big piece to their puzzle. Patrick Mahomes looked almost human yesterday. My dad was commenting about how he was throwing the ball, but I was like, you know what? When you're on the ground 90% of the time, you're going to try to get the ball out as many times as you can.
I mean, that man, he really had a nice game. I mean, people can look at his stats all you want. He's running for his life on a bad toe. You know, he's had a bad toe for a couple weeks now. It's the second or third game he's had the bad toe in. But just a couple of those drops that his teammates had. You know, they were just two he threw to the end zone.
Yes.
I mean, hitting guys in a face mask. And they're professional receivers. I mean, they ought to be coming down with at least one of those balls.
Well, that one that was hit in the face mask, I thought it was going to impale the guy in the head.
That was a
bullet.
Yeah, that was the one to the running back, I believe.
I can't remember. All I remember is that his head being knocked backwards because of the force of the pass.
And I mean, there was one to Hill that was in the end zone too, I believe, that sort of went through his hands too. That, I mean, those could have been difference makers. The one the tight end dropped on the third and long, you know, which would have moved the sticks early in the game.
Well, what did you think about the Vince Lombardi commercial at the very beginning and seeing his hologram?
I was more impressed with before the hologram, before they showed in the stadium. And they showed him walking through the field and walking by, you know, different people and things like that, and him talking. I'm sitting there going, wow, that's impressive. It looks like it's really him. When they put it in the stadium on the screen, it looked more computer graphic wise. You know, it sort of lost some of its flavor to me. But I mean, the message was awesome.
Oh, it was. This year. And you probably were affected like I am or like everybody else this year and last year definitely have thrown a lot of things off. But I was listening to talk radio today and the sportscaster was talking about how football has helped us through more than what we realize.
Oh, I agree. I mean, just think about we sort of lost good part of the seasons on the other sports. You know, basketball, those guys didn't have a chance. Hockey really didn't have a chance. Back when they were supposed to be being played. But the NFL came up with a plan by watching some of the other sports that were going on. You know, baseball was, you know, sort of half their season was gone. But the NFL had a plan and they stuck to it and everything done on time. There was a couple games that were late, pushed back, you know, like the Titans pushing the Steelers, losing their bye game. But we won't talk about that.
No, see, now we're getting to personal things here.
But I mean, I'm impressed with what the NFL did. I mean, I think they had a plan. They stuck to it. They kept their players as safe as they could. Was it perfect? No. But, you know, they had to push some games to Tuesdays and Wednesdays, or maybe miss a week. But they got the playoffs off on time without a lot of people missing, except maybe the Cleveland Browns are the first round of the playoffs, but they still played tremendously. And they got the Super Bowl on time and everybody enjoyed it. And it helped the nation forget about the problems, I think, for a little bit. You know, it gave you some normalcy to the world.
So what are you going to do from here to August?
I watch a lot of football tape and listen to a lot of podcasts.
No, there you go. Like the Pigskin Dispatch every day.
Yeah, that can be one.
That could be one. You have, if I did the math correctly, the Steelers have won six Super Bowls.
Six Super Bowls.
And they have been in
eight. Yes.
Is that correct? Eight.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite Super Bowl?
You know what? I'm old school. I like Super Bowl 13. I love the matchup, you know, the Cowboys and the Steelers. It was the second time that they met. They met three times in the Super Bowl. The second time that they met, they had something, it was like 28 Hall of Famers involved with the game between the sidelines and the booths and everything.
Oh, good gracious.
On the field. I mean, that's a good portion of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You know, that's, the game lived up to its expectations. You know, it came down to 35-31 at the end of that game. That's a game Dallas had to settle for a field goal near the end of the first half when Jackie Smith dropped that pass in the end zone wide open, which was definitely a game changer. You know, 4-point swing and they lost by four. But it was just everything. You had two great quarterbacks, you know, Hall of Fame quarterbacks. You had two great running backs, if you count Blyer. The wide receivers, you know, between the Pearsons on Dallas and you had Stallworth and Swan on Pittsburgh. It was just everything that in the defenses, you know, the personalities on the defenses, you know, you had Hollywood Henderson and, you know, him, a lot of chatter before the game and, you know, insulting Bradshaw and that got, you know, Jack Lambert upset and Mean Joe Green upset. You know, it was just great. It's just great football. I love that old stuff. It doesn't get much better than that.
Was that the one where he said he couldn't spell cat if you gave him the C and the A?
Yeah, it was something to that effect, right?
Yeah, Terry Bradshaw made being dumb into an art form. He knew what he was doing. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Oh yeah, he's a much much more intelligent person than he's ever been given credit for, I think.
Yeah, I tell you what, I watched the video of it, and I believe that Super Bowl, if the Steelers were not in the way, the Cowboys would have had a lot more Super Bowls in the 70s. And I think the Steelers stood in between the Cowboys and basically owning the 70s.
That, I think that's true. And I think maybe the Oilers and the Raiders might argue with that, because I think the Oilers definitely had the Steelers in a way. And they, especially the end of the 70s, they had some tremendous teams. They were well coached and just couldn't get past that AFC championship game. I think they met two or three times in a row.
And they got cheated 70s. Out of one of them. But again, we're not harboring any old feelings today, are we? But the reason I had it on here, because in your podcast, and I listen to every one of them, enjoy them.
Thank you.
Hey, give credit when credit's due. In your podcast, you take the history of the sport and you make it apply to the situation at hand. Okay. You don't give us just facts. You say, well, this is the facts and here's how it applies. And that's something, you know, like the birthdays and the events. You give us a little backstory and tell how it applies. And then I've heard you even use it and say, well, this is how it applies today. You are the person that I think would best answer this, because I wanted to know what makes football, especially NFL, America's sport.
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons. I mean, first of all, just the history of it. I mean, you had the game basically of soccer and rugby coming across the pond over to the U.S. And, you know, there was the famous game, you know, 1874, you had Harvard and McGill. McGill was a Canadian school. There's a Canadian school. And they played rugby. They sort of introduced rugby into American collegiate sports, which Harvard adopted. Everybody else was still playing basically a variation of soccer. But 1880, Walter Camp, when he came up with the line of scrimmage and, you know, the snap and the quarterback position and the center and downs and distance, that was an American making an American game of something, you know, being very innovative, and it sort of that ball rolling. I think that's where why we can call it an American game. You know, Canada has a great part in that too, but it was Camp coming up the down and distance in the scrimmage that really set it apart from rugby, sort of broke the tie there. I think you can go on through history and you get into especially the NFL, their sort of watershed moment was probably that 1958 championship game. It really created a lot of popularity, because before that, baseball was king. There was, you know, in college football to some extent, but that really put the NFL and pro football on the map, and it sort of paved the way for the AFL to come out a couple years later because of the popularity of that one game. I think that's what it did. And the NFL just sort of grew from that, and sort of some point with Super Bowls, it really surpassed baseball. And I was looking at some stats today of television. You know, why is football America's game now? And just television is the perfect, football is a perfect game for television, and much more so than any other sport. And here's my proof. I mean, television audiences, the largest television audience to watch a World Series game was 1978, the Dodgers and the Yankees. They had 44 million watch one of their games. NCAA basketball, biggest game ever watched, 35.1 million, Michigan State, Indiana in 1979. NASCAR's Daytona 500, the highest Daytona 500 I could find in my research was 23 million viewers on television. College football, the BCS championships, the largest one was USC Texas in 2006, 35.6 million. Okay, those are some big numbers, you know, talking 20s, 30s million. If you look at the top 30 television programs in the United States, watching the United States now, 29 of the top 30 are Super Bowls. The only exception is that number 9 was the final episode of MASH. It was like 105 million. But the highest Super Bowl is 114 million. I mean, compare that to 35 million of the next closest American sport to be watched. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, if you go to worldwide sports, there's, you know, Olympic games and some boxing fights around the world that were a little bit higher than the Super Bowls. But American sports, that's why I think football is America's sport. Television is one of the main reasons.
Well, you and I had the same idea. I looked up the top three or the top five viewed episodes or shows this year, this past year. Mm-hmm. Number one was, I believe, Monday Night Football. Number three was Thursday Night Football. Number three was Sunday Night Football. Number four was Thursday Night Football.
Well, yeah. I mean, what does that tell you? Yeah. And there's a lot of good programs out there, and there's a lot of things people can watch. You know,
Since they got rid of, since Big Bang Theory went off the air, it's kind of hard to watch some of these things. But no, you're right. And the thing is, John Eisenberg wrote a great book called The League. And in one of it, he was talking about how, in one of the chapters, he talked about how football was made for television because of the size of the ball and because of the fluid motion. Baseball was too small. I've been to several hockey games. It's great to watch in person, but it's hard to watch on TV.
I agree.
I like listening to it on the radio, but it's hard to watch on TV. But football can be watched on television, in public, and on the radio. It fits everything that America does. And now you got it on the phone. You can take it anywhere.
Right.
You're saying that it's America has a lot of good things. We were talking a little bit about Scotland and being Scott Irish. Both of us have roots in Scotland and Ireland. America takes a lot of what the old world has and makes it their own. It washes up on our shore and we make it our own. And
good way to say it.
Yeah. You talk about rugby, you talk about soccer. Well, what did we make out of it? We made foot soccer, basically.
Right.
And it becomes, but the thing about the Super Bowl that really gets me, and I was trying to explain to my family yesterday, is the halftime show. The halftime show. That is a very recent thing that make it as big as it was. What did you think about yesterday's halftime show?
Well, I'm not that familiar with the artists that played, but I can tell you one thing. My wife is not a football fan. She tolerates football in our house because she has to, because there's so much of it in her home. But she every year wants to watch Super Bowl. And yesterday she sat down with me. She goes, "I'm going to watch the game with you." I said, "Oh, great." I said, "But, you know, what part of the game are you going to enjoy?" She goes, "Well, I'm just watching. I want the commercials and the halftime show." I mean, that's become part of the spectacle of the Super Bowl, you know, the halftime show and those commercials, which I still don't understand, but people,
the commercials this year, was lacking in a lot of ways. I got what they were doing, but I remember growing up in the 90s when they had some funny, funny commercials, Jordan versus Bird, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That one was from that. And the Bud Light commercials were hilarious. Of course, yesterday had a good one too. But I was telling my kids that the halftime program really took off when In Living Color was going to have a live episode during the halftime of the Super Bowl. And the NFL said, "We're going to lose people. They're not going to come back." So they said, "What can we do? Oh, how about we put Michael Jackson and let him perform during halftime?" And guess what? It worked.
Right.
Now, to me, the best halftime performance I've seen is the Prince a few years ago. He performed out in the rain. He did an amazing job.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorites, I think, is the Paul McCartney Super Bowl. I'm a Beatles fan. I love the old music. But to have Paul McCartney, you know, 60-some years old up there singing, and the connection he made with the younger crowd, you know, of course, then there was no COVID, so fans could be right up on the field and right up on by the stage where the performers were. I thought that was phenomenal, you know.
Absolutely. Did you you remember Tom Petty when he came up and sang? He did a great job.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, the thing that got me is that they had people who were in their 20s running up to Tom Petty and screaming at him. I was like, "Do you even know who he is?"
Yeah.
I doubt that they know. They probably know Free Falling from Jerry Maguire, but they probably don't know who did it.
But you know what, though? I have a 16-year-old daughter that still lives at home. And we get in a car. We have, you know, Sirius XM playing. When we're going somewhere as a family, and, you know, hearing these 70s songs, my daughter goes, oh, yeah. She starts singing along. I'm like, how do you know this song? She goes, TikTok, Dad.
Oh, my goodness.
Songs are on TikTok, and these kids are learning these songs. You know, I can't say that when I was 16 years old, I could know, you know, my dad's music from the late 50s and early 60s. You know, I was around it, but I didn't really know it. But my daughter knows the words of 70s songs. You know,
I was very proud of my son today. My son is 15, and his dog, we were eating dinner, and his dog came up underneath the table to try to get food. And I said, your dog, Connor, my son's name is Connor, said, your dog is under the table. And he finished it by saying, under the table and dreaming. He quoted a Dave Matthews song. And at that point, my heart left, and I said, I am doing my job. Now, Aaron, I appreciate your time. You really do a lot of the past of football, and that's your goal with the Pigpen and everything like that. You talk about the past, but let's put on your Nostradamus hat. Okay.
Okay.
20 years from now, if we're still around, don't know. What is football going to look like in 20 years?
I think what they're going to do is sort of the trend that's been going on the last 30 years. It's going to be more wide open game, especially in the NFL and college. NFL is sort of following college's lead here. They want scoring. Scoring puts, you know, seats in the stands and makes people leave their televisions on. And, you know, you can have a game like last night where a team's down 31-9 with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter and people are still expecting a comeback, you know, that scored three quick touchdowns. I think they're going to put more restrictions on defensive backs in the secondary. They're doing more and more of that every year, which a lot of it's great for safety and everything. But I think they're going to encourage more passing. Maybe they'll allow more motion, almost dare I say, go like the Canadian game where you can have more than one man in motion in the backfield. I think they might start doing some things like that, open up football even a little bit more so there's more scoring, because that's what they seem to trend towards.
You think that safety will come as a result of some of this?
Oh, I think definitely safety's involved in it. I mean, I think they're going to have, you know, some of the equipment I think is going to get better. You see helmets getting better and better every year. They're doing a lot of science into the pads and everything. They're looking at some of the pads. Like, how many players do you see now at the college in the professional level that wear pads below the belt? I don't think I see anybody wearing knee pads and thigh pads anymore. It's rare in the game.
I don't see them very often.
No, but years ago, I mean, everybody wore them. You know, maybe a receiver would take their knee pads out for get more speed. But the shoulder pads are smaller than they were 20 years ago. I think that's what they're doing. They're trying to make a sleeker design for the players to be more comfortable, be more fluid, to encourage scoring and better activity.
Well, I think, and I found that sometimes having more pads actually doesn't help with safety.
I agree.
And you know, think, well, how's that the case? If you ever watch, if a car hits another car going fast, the car explodes. Mm-hmm. That's it's how it's designed. So they make pads designed to not absorb it, but to spread it out. And the helmets are the same thing.
I agree. But some of the technology in the helmets and the shoulder pads, they're making better, sturdier materials that are lighter. And
my dog's just, we live out here in the country and they think that a squirrel is in their territory. So they just kind of startled me there. Go ahead.
Okay. But I think some of the materials and the technology of, nanotechnology and everything, I think that's going to help it. I think you're going to see chips in the balls. You already start seeing that. I think you're going to see things like down markers and yard to gain measuring tools change. I think they're going to be more laser oriented. So you won't have a measurement on the game. The measurement will have a laser beam going across. You know, I think they're going to see little things like that. It'll speed the game up, make it more accurate. Maybe do some more with some instant replay, which I hate to see, but.
but I can tell you this, in 20 years, we'll still see Tom Brady winning Super Bowls.
It could be,
Well, tell us a little bit about your podcast and your website and what you have planned for us in the next little bit.
Well, the basic goal of the website and podcast is just like you're doing. We want to preserve the football history. I think it's such an important thing to look for such a great game to appreciate those who have come before us in some of their innovations and accomplishments and great plays and, you know, longevity of careers and their stories. You know, just find those stories of some of these great individuals that did some great things on the football field or for football. And I like to do it in a positive aspect. I call it positive football. I don't really want to hear about the knuckleheads that did something, you know, off the field that's a detriment to the game. I want to talk about the positive and preserve those people. And it starts with the Hall of Famers of the College Football Hall of Fame and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We try to honor those folks daily on their birthdays. And so usually we have anywhere from, you know, sometimes one, sometimes, you know, 6 to 10 Hall of Famers. It's odd how they're scattered throughout there, but there's 1500 individuals. Some are in both, but it's probably more like 1200 individuals that we talk about, and just to honor them on their birthday. We also like to go, you know, the headlines of that day. We will go back all the way as far as we can to find a date in history. You know, if it's, February 10th, we try to find everything that happened on February 10th. And content shrinks up a little bit, you know, once you get in that second week of February all the way till August. But there's still tidbits out there, and there's little nuggets that we try to share with everybody. And that's just part of our duty of paying homage to the football nostalgia.
Now, one thing I do like about your podcast, and I look at your website daily as well, your podcast is, like you said, positive. You have a lot of energy in it, and that's something I try to mirror myself. I love listening to how you could tell you love your topic. You could tell you are into your topic. It means something to you. And like I tell people when it comes to what I do for a living and some people who want to do that as well, if you don't love it, people know it quickly.
I agree.
They'll know it quickly and they won't listen. You, Darren, I look at you and I said, that's what I want to be like, what you're doing. Oh. And I appreciate that. And
well, thank you.
Like I said, give credit where credit's due. If you listen to his podcast, it's energy filled. You're real in what you say because it comes from your heart. And I'm proud to be your friend. I'm proud to know you. Oh. And I'm proud to be part of this network with you.
Well, now, thank you.
Now, here's the thing I want from you. When you make a book, put all this together, say that you knew me.
Yeah. Say that I don't you know about me. The book. All the information I have, it comes from others. I mean, very little of it is my own experience, you know, because most of it I didn't live through. But you know, I rely heavily on the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the National Football Foundation, which is sort of the college body of the College Football Hall of Fame. They're the ones that vote for who goes in the Hall of Fame. Pro Football Reference, you know, things like that. I'm a nerd in that kind of things. Great authors, you know, yep, that have some great books. And I know you're a reader of the books too. And just so some of the other folks, you know, like absolutely, yourself and, you know, Joe Zagorski and Joe Zimba and their podcasts but you know, Arnie Chapman's podcast and his guests that he brings on and some of the things that they bring in there, it just brings a life to football and it brings that nostalgia back. You know, there's an energy to it.
Well, I think you and I need to, I have a plan. I'll get it off air and we'll work out some details, but there might be some articles coming from me soon that Darren here was going to write as well. He doesn't know it yet, but he will for the website. So let's get your website out here and let's get your podcast out here again.
Okay. It's pigskindispatch.com. And the podcast is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch podcast. And you know, like I said, we're going to go into some events out in the off season. We just started on February 8th today, while we're recording this, started talking about, we're going to go through over 100 days of going through G numbers. They won't be consecutive, but that's how we're going to fill our off season. We're going to pay tribute to people that wore the number 0 and number 1 and number 2 and have some discussions, try to bring as many guests on as we can. I know, Jeremy, we have you scheduled for episode coming up next week. We're going to be talking about here later this week, talking about the number six, I believe we have.
Yeah, there's only one number six in my heart.
Well, we won't throw any spoilers out there.
Jay Cutler, but that's all right. That's all right. But Darren, I appreciate you coming on and taking your time today. You got a Twitter account as well?
Yeah, it's at Pigskin Dispatch. You know, everything's got Pigskin Dispatch in it. So at Pigskin Dispatch, just and look
the
for
the. The pig pen is clean. Let me just say that. The pig pen is clean.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. But yeah, just look for that winking pig with the leather football helmet on. You know you're at the right place.
Football is family, and Darren Hayes is part of the reason why that is. Thank you, Darren.
Well, thank you, Jeremy.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
The Pigskin Tales podcast is all about the lesser known pro football players. Yes, there are stories about the ones we know, like Brad Tarkenton and Harold Red Grange. But have you ever heard of Ernie Nevers? How about Dave Osborne or even Grady Alderman? These men created their own path to the NFL. How did they do it? Listen to the Pigskin Tales podcast. Now streaming on your favorite music platform. Go to pigskintales.com.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.